Succession number 11945, rule 5.
You were saying that it was very boring being on minesweeping duty from Scarpa. Was there anything you could do when you weren't actually on duty to relieve the boredom?
Well, a small ship with about a crew of 100, there's not much to do. Recreation except for card playing. I mean, physical exercise is, well, running around the deck, if it's possible. But there's no entertainment at all, really, as I say, except card playing.
What games did you play?
Well, the usual, whist, crib. Gambling was, well, that was taboo. You weren't allowed to. If you, yeah, I mean, we did gamble on Crown and Anchor. That's the old famous game. But on a ship that size, there's no form of, not like a battleship, not at all. I mean, a small ship in those days, we were paid 6 pence a day extra for what was known as hard line money. I'll give you some idea of the conditions, that they'd pay you 50% extra, almost 50% extra pay for being on that ship. And for a submarine, an able seaman who received normally 1 8 pence per day on a submarine, his pay was over doubled, 2 shillings a day extra.
Did you ever get ashore?
Well, up in Scarpa Flow, the shore was laid on by the services, the NAFI, or which was then known as the National Navy and Army Canteen Board. Now, that was a private concern run by the fleet, from which developed the present NAFI, Navy, Army and Air Force Institutes. And whatever we bought was with a chit, and you paid for it at the end of the month. That's only on a battleship. On a small ship, you didn't have that sort of thing. But as I say, that was known as the NAFI, Navy and Army Canteen Board, and it was run privately, mostly by Maltese people, funnily enough. They were civilians on board, so that we'd take the Battle of Jutland, the battleships there, they were in it as well, doing their little stint in somewhere, from a medical point of view, was over the medical staff. Or anything that was a point that they were detailed off to do. That was part of the contract. And from that, they got every pound that was spent by at the shop, a shilling in the pound was allocated to the sports fund. And that's where we got the equipment for, say, football or whatever, you know, any equipment wanted for sport. That was on a battleship, because a small boat didn't have those facilities.
But did you manage to get ashore in Kirkwall or anywhere like that?
No, never. The only time you went ashore was if you were going on leave. And every 6 months you'd get, with luck, you'd get about a week's leave. Unless for some unforeseen circumstances that, for instance, in the minesweeping, four ships, got sent to Oban. There's a minefield been laid there. We were sent there. Well, HMS... Oh, dear. I was on HMS Leader then, and one of the ships, old, funny old ships they were, got blown up which didn't hit a mine, but it sunk. And the mine exploded on the bottom. She had the misfortune to be under, over the top of it. 128 lost their lives on that. We had the misfortune to damage the A brackets of the propeller shaft, and that put us into Greenock for repairs. And it would take a month to repair. Well, that month, as a ship's crew there doing nothing. And that's when I was sent back to Chatham, had a week's leave, and then sent back to Chatham for drafting to another ship. Well, I was from Chatham, that would be 1917, and I was drafted to HMS Patrol. No, that would be back end of 1916, I was drafted to HMS Patrol at Humberside, Immingham. Now, HMS Patrol was a depot ship, and I was sent up there as a spare operator for the flotilla. That was on convoy work then. What happened then was that if one of the operators on the small ship, if he went sick, I was a spare hand, spare operator. So I would be sent to that ship until that fellow was ready for returning to his ship. And during the 12 months I was on that, I was sent to HMS Liffey, HMS Doon, and P-47. They were escort ships for convoy. We used to convoy from Immingham to Lerwick. It used to take 4 days. And you'd come back, you'd have a day up there, and then you'd bring another convoy back from Lerwick to Immingham, backward and forward, backward and forward. And you weren't allowed to use your wireless for transmitting till you got to... Spurn Point. Spurn Point. That was at the... we go up to Spurn Point. When you passed Spurn Point, you could transmit if you had anything to do. But you kept what was known as wireless silence till you got to Spurn Point. And... because then you could, if when messages and that, you could whatever you could use your wireless, but with only one operator on board, that's all we had. And you was 4 days at sea. You weren't on watch all the time. You had 4 hours on, 4 hours off, 4 hours on, four right through the trip. And at certain times, allocated times that we knew that was in the regulations. Such as colour coats, one of the wireless stations, would broadcast any information required for you. Whether you answered or not, you knew by the signal whether to acknowledge it, because once you acknowledge it, you're divulging your position on what was known then as direction finding WT, wireless. It's very crude, but it was... up to a point was effective, because you must bear in mind that those days aircraft were practically non-existent as far as the Navy was concerned. But anyway, I had about 12 months of that, and then HMS Patrol was sent to Queenstown, and as a spare hand on HMS Patrol, was sent back to barracks for redrafting to another ship. And that I was drafted to HMS Patrol at Queenstown. Now, she was in command of submarine duties, hunting submarines all around there, up the Irish Sea and round Southern Ireland and that. But we had a commander on board, a captain on board there. It was VC, and he earned his VC on the Q boats. And the cube boat was a merchant ship or a seagoing trawler that was disguised. Mainly merchant ship or a sailing ship, didn't matter what it was. But to all outward, seeing it through binoculars, it looked just an ordinary merchant ship or an ordinary sailing ship. There it was, doing its stuff. But behind all the facade were guns. Not loads of them, but about three or four guns either side or hidden up out of sight. Well, in a cube boat, when a U-boat spotted this in the first place, they were wary of what it was and that. And directly the U-boat made itself known. It was a panic party. He was to leave this ship, this sailing boat, or whichever it was, and so they're deserting the ship. But left on board as the remainder of the crew, hidden away there, out of sight, and there's the ship, to all intents and purposes, deserted. And the U-boat had gradually come nearer, and she didn't want to use her torpedoes. Come nearer and nearer, and when she was in, within range, say 100 or 200 yards, she was under observation from the cue boat all the time. Directly the skipper on board thought the time was ripe, down flaps, and before the U boat could get away, she's on the surface. Before she could get dive, she's had her chips. And this commander, Campbell, I think his name was, he got the VC. He was awarded the VC for his part in some of these exploits. And he was in charge, captain of HMS Patrol, and he was a so-and-so. Oh, he was a so-and-so. 2 o'clock in the morning. Sound the alarm, abandoned ship. This is all exercising in harbour. Keep you on your toes. Anyway, after a while I was sent from HMS Patrol back to Chatham Barracks again, when the reason I was sent back that time was a new type of wireless had just came into being, called CW, continuous wave. And this continuous wave wireless was quite a new thing. And to operate it, you had to go through a course. I knew nothing about it. I'm back to barracks. And from there, I was sent to a destroyer, HMS Sprightly. Now, HMS Sprightly was what was known as a four-funnelled turtleback. A cold-burning four-funnelled turtleback, built in 1898, HMS Sprightly. And our job was from Holyhead to Dublin, just patrolling backwards and forwards between those two places on patrol, submarine hunting. Whether we had any luck or not, I don't know. But we were there 9 days out, 1 day in. And your 1 day back into Holyhead was supposed to be for recreation. It wasn't. You would go back to coal ship. You're coaling ship for that day. Then the following day, you're out again for another 9 days, backward and forward, between Holyhead and Dublin. You don't go into harbour. You say within 5 miles of Dublin, 5 miles of Holyhead. That's your sort of a square. And you pick up reports of submarines from Cape Roth up north. You can trace them right the way down as they're reported through various sinkings or whatever. I don't know. But anyway, we had to. It was monotonous. But yet, to my way of thinking, it was fun. We had with us a blimp. It's a small airship. not attached to us, but would be in communication with us. Because the higher you are, the more you can see. Weather conditions, right? And that used to, we used to have that used to be with us practically all the time. Not night time. I mean, night time it would go back to base, but of a daytime it was there with us in wireless communication with us. And
did you transmit back to the blimp?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes.
So there's no radio silence with regard to that, then?
No. 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 Not only that. Another thing. It wasn't you to be in touch with the blimp. You could get the blimp to lower a basket. They'd come down, lower a basket down. They'd put a message. You put food in there as well. And they'd pull it up and away. But the wireless was primitive on the blimp. It was very primitive, so there wasn't a lot of it. But we were in touch with them,
presumably
visually as well as.
You could use lamp, couldn't you, or flag for a blimp?
Yes, yeah, or lamp. Anyway, this blimp was with us. We did, and the captain in charge of us at the base of Queenstown was this also, Captain Gordon Campbell, VC. He's the devil. Anyway, at the end. November the 11th, 1918, I was on watch. I was the only wireless operator on board. I was on watch, and there was a little canvas cabin there, and a hot window. Open the window, and you're looking onto the bridge. And I picked up a signal in code from Land's End, GLD. That was the call. I always remember the call sign. GLD, and it was a message to all ships in code. But we now decoded it. Here it was all about the war finishing. That at 11 o'clock, the war finished. Armistice had been signed to come into operation at 11 o'clock. No action was to take place unless. This is to all ships, mind, not to us personally. No actions to take place unless the enemy opened fire on us. You see, in other words, we were friends again. Well, we thought we were going back to harbour. No fear, not Mr. Gamble. He kept us out all that night. He let us into Holly. We were ordered back to harbour. Next morning, arrived in harbour at Holyhead, 9 o'clock. And one of my duties as a wireless operator, directly we went in harbour. I didn't call ship at all. I wasn't allowed to. Directly we got in harbour, I became the ship's postman. Go ashore to the post office and collect the mail, bring it back. Well, I went ashore in Holyhead that on the 12th of November. And it was as dead as a doornail. Quiet. About 9 o'clock in the morning. Oh, God knows what happened. But anyway, we stayed at Holyhead till just before Christmas when we were sent to Plymouth, Devonport, and from there we went on leave. And the ship was decommissioned. I went back to Chatham Barracks. And the others. That was the end of the war for us, you see. But did you one little episode while we was on that boat, this HMS Sprightly, apart the signal I was just telling you about, handed it through to the signalman. He gave it to the captain. The captain knew his name, a Canadian, name of Davy. And he read this, and he got the signal, to flash a signal up to the blimp, lower to come down. The blimp came down, lowered his basket down, they put him a bottle of whiskey in it. There's only a crew of two up there. Put him a bottle of whiskey in. 2 hours later, that ordered his blimp back to base. It was all over the place.
Did you stay on in the Navy after the end of the war?
Yes, I stayed on. I'd signed on for 12 years from the age of 18. Well, I was 18 in 1913, or 15, so about 19. I was 1915, I was 17. I'd be 1916, I was. My time started, my actual service time started in 1916. Although I joined up in 1913, that 3 years doesn't count. The only thing that 3 years makes to you is that if you sign on for a pension, you get fourpence halfpenny a day onto your pension for that. If you get what they call VG for character. But anyway, yes, I'd signed on for 12 years, you see, from the age of 18, so I'm in there. Now's the time I have to start thinking.
I'd like to go back and ask you for some more detail about what you've been telling me. You went off to Immingham.
Immingham?
Yeah. Mm. And you say you're on a depot ship, patrol.
Depot ship, HMS Patrol.
Yeah, what sort of ship was that?
Cruiser.
Big ship. It was a cruiser.
Cruiser.
Mm. Was it a modern cruiser or a...
No, old-fashioned cruiser.
And the escorts you served on, like the Liffey and the Doon, what sort of ships were they?
Destroyers. And the P-47 was a product of the war, you know, and these quick-built things. Very low in the water. In fact, if you saw them at a distance, you'd think it was a submarine that was that low in the water. P-40, they were called P-boats, patrol boats.
What sort of size was that? What would the crew have...
Crew of about 80. Coal burning. There was no oil burning things then. Not as we know them now.
How did it compare to the destroyers as a boat to serve on?
For accommodation? Comfort,
accommodation.
Yes, much about the same. Cramped, you still got your sixpence a day, hard nine money.
What sort of armament did it have?
Armament would be about 4.5 inch gun. Armaments were like pop guns, really, not modern things.
Did it have good sea keeping? Was it good at sea?
From a seaworthy angle?
Yes.
Oh, yes, it was seaworthy. I mean, they'd pitch and roll and that, but because you'd expect that. And any ship would expect that.
You said you got 12 months convoy escort duty going up to Lerwick and back to Immingham. What sort of convoys were they?
Merchant ships. They'd all be gathered outside the Humber, and then you'd start off. It'd be about three ships. Three ships were escort.
And how many merchant ships to be protected?
Could be 20 or more. 20. I'd take them up to Lerwick, and then, of course, they were more or less clear of... being spotted after that, because, as I say, there was no in relation to World War II, I mean, that northern convoy must have been hell for them, poor devils up there on the Arctic convoy, with the German Air Force all based up in Norway and that. There was none of that then, you see. From Lerwick, they'd go to Greenland, then along the top edge of the Barents Sea, around to Murmansk. Because at that time, we were still helping, although Russia had collapsed, we were still helping out with the idea that perhaps the communists wouldn't succeed. We helped a lot. I'm getting a bit further now, talking of Russia. After the war finished and we started to get back to normal, when I say get back to normal, all the HOs, that's the hostility only ratings, had returned home, demobbed and that, and those that were left were regulars. And of course we all got, those who were at home had to get sent out to relieve those who were already out, wherever they were, abroad. Anyway, round about 1919, beginning of 1919, I, with a lot more others, we took passage. We were sent to Devonport. I'll give you a little episode. I remember this. We were paid a month's pay before we left. A month's pay. We were sent to Devonport. HMS Ajax, a battleship, was going to take us to Malta. And before I personally had left Devonport, I'd lost all my money, crown and anchor. Anyway, we get to Devonport, we take passage on the HMS Ajax to Malta. From HMS Ajax, we were transferred to the depot ship there, which was HMS Blenheim. That was just temporary, a couple of days there. Then we were sorted out. I was put on HMS Bryony and sent to Constantinople, with others, of course. We're still sort of spare hands. We're not a crew of anything. We're surplus to requirements, as it were. Anyway, we get to Constantinople and we're put on board HMS Caesar, an old, really old battleship. It's another depot ship. From there, we were allocated to different ships. Now, I was sent to HMS Swallow, a destroyer. The captain's name, I never forget it, the captain's name was Lieutenant Commander Bottom Wetham. Well, he was genuine. I liked him. We had a nickname for him, Bottom Wetham. We used to call him Codshead. Anyway, that was the captain's name. I was on home at HMS Swallow, and we were sent through the Bosphorus up into the Black Sea. There was quite a number of destroyers there. I was on HMS Swallow. And I had a cousin on one of the destroyers. I forget which one he was on, but that's by the way. The ship in charge, the Admiral of the British ships up there, was on HMS Marlborough, which was then a modern battleship. Well, our job up there was to help the White Russians under General Denikin to helping them to try and overcome the Bolshevik element in one way or another. But in other words, we were showing the flag, doing our best. We went to Batum, Poti, Sebastopol, Eupatory, I'm giving you all these names as they come to me. Trebizond was another place we went to. And Sebastopol was, because you know, history will tell you all about that in the Crimea. You could still see the masts of the old ships, sailing ship, battleships, still in the harbour where they'd been sunk. Hadn't been removed. Also there at Sebastopol, we went ashore there, and there was a huge tower there, like a round water tower. You could go up in this. I'm trying to think what we used to call it. But anyway, you could go up there. As you go up in the stairs, all around inside the wall is paintings of the Crimean War. You get to the top, the top inside is a gallery. And all around the wall there is scenes, like, painted on the wall is scenes of the Battle of the Crimea. Well, if you could push that wall down, you'd be looking at the same thing outside. Marvellous it was. I just can't think of the name of it. Anyway, in the Second World War, when the Russians got through there, when the Germans got through there, they destroyed it. Yeah. They destroyed that. But in the main, our trip round the Black Sea, as I say, we're showing the flag. We weren't in action at all, but we were there for support if required.
Did you see anything of any Russian